This episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief. Welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark Flatt, and I'm calling in from the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. Today, as always, I'm joined by my brother Dave. He's calling in from Maryland at the banks of the Potomac River. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
Dude, all right, straight up, Andrew Wiggins dunk on Luka was fucking ridiculous, bro.
Dude, it's the moment of the playoffs, bro.
What's that?
It's the moment of the playoffs.
I mean, at this point, and then he goes off for 27 points in the game too. Like Andrew Wiggins, man, he's really stepping up at the right time. I didn't know if the Golden State had what it took to be able to win without, you know, Andrew Wiggins coming out and playing some great basketball, because they needed a fourth player there. They needed a player to be able to put up some great points, and he's doing that, and it's kind of cool.
To me, the story of Andrew Wiggins' career is something that, like, our last episode we kind of touched on without even saying his name, but when we're like, Chet should really want to go to Oklahoma City and force his way there. Look at what happens if you're in the wrong situation and you go number one. Like, Andrew Wiggins was very close to being, like, on the outside of what could be reasonable for an NBA contract. The wrong situation, the wrong contract, the wrong overall city, and everything can become bad. I mean, I remember watching Andrew Wiggins play when we would play them, the Timberwolves, and I would go in person, and he was like a rookie, and I could see the talent, right? It was like he could jump higher than just about everybody else out there, and he had a really good shot, but the organization didn't teach him how to put it all together. And then he goes to the right place, he looks like a number one pick. And that's why I'm like, hey, if you're around Chet, like, you've got to really consider the likelihood that, yeah, you can have all the tools, but if the organization doesn't teach you things like how to get free throws, you know, extra points without having to take shots, and how to, you know, do all the little things like show up to work every day and make sure that you become a top level professional, then you risk having a long and successful career. So it's very interesting to watch Andrew Wiggins, like, what can happen in the right situation. And obviously, the Warriors have been able to make the most out of what they can get their hands on. And there's also times where, you know, they've made mistakes when it comes to like the draft and things like that. But, you know, you get a player like Andrew Wiggins and you turn his career around, then you better believe that other NBA players are paying attention, and they're going to see that as a place where they could go and revive their career. So, yeah, you put it all together and it's a pretty massive situation for everybody. Everybody's taking notice of Andrew Wiggins, and they rightfully should. But his story is one where there was never a guarantee, and it all comes down to one thing. He got drafted by the wrong team.
I mean, but you look at this Warriors team, and everybody's like, oh, they're the old team of the playoffs. But you got Green, Draymond Green. You've got Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, and Looney, right? They're all above 30 or 28, 20, you know, 30, whatever. But then you got your young group though, man, right? You've got Moody, you've got Kuminga. I still consider Wiggins as part of that young core, because I mean, still like what, 8 years or 7 years in his career. So into his career. So he's still pretty young. You've got the big man. I can't even think of his name right now, that went to Memphis for that plays for them. You've got a young core right there that needs time to develop. But the rest of it, man, if they learn how to plug in these guys, like Jonathan Kuminga could be a special player. And he learns how to win a ring from, Draymond Green. You know, you tell me that's not going to be good for his career. Like, these guys are putting themselves in positions, and the Warriors are putting themselves in positions to be, you know, good for a longevity. Like, obviously you need to be able to develop some of these players that you have, and you got a lot of young players, but it's kind of cool because if you look at it in 4 or 5 years, this team could still be in the playoffs, you know, working and clicking and having Steph Curry still on the floor and stuff like that. I mean, who knows, man? This team could be really good for a while, and allowing guys like Steph and Klay to get less time to allow them to have more minutes throughout their career. So, man, I don't know. I'm pretty pumped right now. This is kind of cool to see how the Warriors are putting it together, up 3-0 against Dallas. So I'm not saying it's over because we've seen teams come back, but I feel like it's pretty much over if they just do their shit.
Has there a team that's come back from 3-0 in a conference finals? I don't think it's ever happened before.
Well, I mean, yeah, with the Yankees, though, man. It did happen with the Yankees that one year.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm definitely a basketball situation. It's a little bit different. Not entirely, obviously. Like, if there was an injury or something like that, it could change it. But the Warriors are different, right, than any other team left in the playoffs in that their championship pedigree makes us really think that that 3-0 lead should be enough that it doesn't matter, right? The door's closed, and if they blow that lead, I mean, people are going to look at that as, like, the moment that people realize they weren't afraid of the Warriors anymore or something like that. You know, it'd be a pretty crazy situation. So, Luka's a hell of a player, but it doesn't matter how good you are. That 3-0 deficit or 0-3 deficit, yeah, that's a bitch, and there's no way to get around that. So you put Steph Curry on the other team, and you got to figure that they're going to get it done, especially when you get play from guys like who are role players who can step up and do more than just be role players. Yeah. That's when you're in trouble. So, I mean, good for the Warriors. At this point, they look like they have a chance to be rested going into the finals, and I think that should be a big – you know, big positive for them. So they're looking like the favorites, like, just because of that one factor. But, you know, things can change, and it's been an interesting conference finals on the East too, bro. Like, pretty great games, like, as far as, like, one team asserting their will, the other team asserting their will, and then we had a game 3 that was a hell of a game.
Yeah, and I'm all for big games like this, because I know in a couple of years we're going to be in these positions. So, you know, like, I know how amped up I get, especially in the fourth quarter of these games. And it just makes me excited, because it's just going to carry on, you know, like, this is going to be the Thunder in a few years and stuff. And I want to go back and talk about this draft coming up, Mark, because, like, we'll get back to the other NBA games going on right now. But I want to go back with this, because I went back and I kind of was, like, really trying to understand exactly where the Orlando Magic are coming from, because I want to get a better understanding of how Jabari Smith truly fits in that program. And the reality is that how Sam Presti values somebody like Chet. Could Paolo jump Chet? I mean, there's always that possibility, because the reality is that I don't think Paolo was in the best circumstances for the type of player that he is and was at Duke. I think that more of a free-spirited offense would do him very well. So I think that there's always that possibility. And that's just because I went back and looked at some of the game film on Paolo and was like, man, you know, I could see something like this happening. But even then, I would have to feel like that Sam Presti would understand the value of Chet Holmgren, and he would look at it like maybe with the Houston Rockets, you know, swapping picks or something like that. You know, getting to that spot that they can move back just slightly to pick up the player that they truly want. But getting back to Jabari Smith and his fit with Orlando, I think it's quite obvious. Like, if you look at who they have, they got Wagner.
It's a V, Wagner. But it's a W, but you say it with a V.
Wagner. I struggle at it. But let's just go with Wagner. He used to be one of my best friends in high school. Alex Wagner was a pretty cool guy. And this is just this guy's name is Wagner. So think about Wagner at the small forward and Wendell Carter at the starting center, and then you try to put in Chet or you try to put in Jabari in that four position, right? Again, to me, Chet needs a little time. He doesn't need to play all these minutes at the power forward position yet. You know, like, get him game experience before you have to play him up against those big bodies.
So you're saying starting him out, he needs small forward minutes?
Well, I would say small forward defender, or maybe like half time on small forward and half time on power forward.
You remember when KD first came into the league? we always would throw him the ball. Yeah. Like, he would try to get a free throw line extended, but eventually the defense would kind of push him to about the 3-point line, and then we would initiate our offense.
Yep.
Like, that's kind of the small forward position I see him. Like, if he if they let him stand there and get the ball close to the basket, he'll get it. But if not, they're going to push him.
He will guard the power forward will inevitably be guarding Chet. Like, there's no way of getting out of it. They might even throw the center on it. But when he's playing defense, right, and he's putting a lot of his energy out, that's where I see him, like, on moving him forward. At the small forward defender starting off until the switch happens. Because there's always going to be that switching going on.
Right.
So that's what I see with Chet. And the thing about that is with Orlando, Orlando's smart enough to recognize that Jabari is ready to go at the four position right away. Like, without any questions. Like, boom. You plug him in there between Wagner and Carter, and you've got yourself a really nice front three or back three, whatever you want to call it. You know? Like,
yeah,
you're solid. That's what I think that Orlando's looking at. They're looking at, like, our defensive is defense with Jabari is going to be better. Our offense with Jabari is going to be better. He's going to be able to put the most minutes in the game right now, especially between Carter, you know, and Wagner. So to me, like, I feel like this is something that really fits who Jabari is. And again, it goes back to what we talked about pre-draft, you know, and pre-lotto, where we said that, you know, I don't think we said it on here, but you and I talked as, like, the only team I see Orlando Magic or picking Jabari ahead of Chet is Orlando Magic. You know, like,
right.
Just it fits what they're trying to do there in Orlando. But the thing is, though, is that I think if Orlando got the second pick, they would be stoked to get Jabari at number two. They would feel like they won because that's probably who they wanted now. So the fact is that I think it's wild card at number one now, because the reality is that if I'm sitting at Orlando and I just say Jabari, that's it, right? I fail, because you have to break down everything that's happening. You have to break down Chet. You have to break down the fit of Chet, because you have that first pick and you're just foolish if you don't do that. So there's always that room for all of a sudden the entire front office is like, shit, we got to go with Chet here, guys. We can't pass up Chet. And there's always that possibility. But these guys have been in the league for a while. I think Jabari is their number one guy on their draft board. I think if you looked at their draft board, you would see Jabari number one, Chet number two, and so on and so forth. So I think that's why Chet falls to number two. Doesn't mean that OKC 100% picks him up. I want to say yes, but I think, again, me trying to predict who Sam Presti is going to go with here would be foolish, especially with guys like Paolo and guys like Shaedon Sharpe and Jaden Ivey on the board. These three guys I look at as great consolation prizes to this draft if Sam Presti decides to trade back for longevity and he sees value in some of these other guys.
One thing that I think is interesting is, you know, we're the only team that owns two picks in the lottery. So the idea of moving up by, you know, or like moving back and getting a couple of picks from a team, somebody's going to have to make a move to, you know, get another lottery pick to really entice us if we're going to even think about moving up.
Or an unprotected pick for next year.
Right. So if it's the right team, right? If it's the right organization and you're betting against them. But in the end, I see us using this pick. I think you're right. Orlando is looking at Jabari and they're thinking, right, like, he kind of completes what they're building. But Chet could be considered like the best long-term project or prospect. And if that's the case, there's always a chance they'll take him. But I think Chet could go to Orlando and have trouble fitting in for the first 2 years and not look like a number one pick, right? Like, just because
that's always the possibility with any first you know, pick of the draft, especially with somebody like Chet that needs a little time, you know? I'm not saying that Chet needs, like, years and years and years. I'm saying, like look at Josh Giddey. He needed a little time, and then it clicked. Like, Chet's the same way. He needs a little time, and it'll click.
I mean, it takes patience, and can you get that, like, experience in the first year when you have guys like Suggs who want the ball in their hands, and Cole Anthony who wants the ball in his hands, and Wagner who, you know, needs the ball in his hands, and Carter Jr. who needs the ball. So that's where it becomes, like, you know, it needs, like, that, and that's when I look at, like, you go back to, like, these two players, and if you're looking at, like, historical comps, I think you've got one player that lines up to be really a better version of Karl Malone, which, you know, is the second leading scorer in history, but he shoots better from distance, and he's a little bit more athletic. But then you have another guy that looks like be a modern Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and you can't really miss on either of those guys. But the question is, which one is the better, you know, long-term prospect? It's obviously Chet, in our opinion, but for the Orlando Magic, like, do they have the patience to wait 8 years for him to reach his peak? Or how about a guy that could be, you know, all NBA in the next 3 years? That's that's the comp. And, you know, when you look at a player like Dirk, it took Dirk a number of years to reach his the pinnacle of his career, right? I mean, he probably played for 15 years before he got a championship or something like that, right? So it's a long-term prospect. It's a long-term project, but that's why I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, I think you're right. And hey, you know, we could be wrong. We could be wishful thinking, but when I see, like, first of all, Jabari moves very well with the ball in his hands, but the way that they both move, Chet moves more like a guard on the perimeter than Jabari. Jabari moves like a modern Chris Webber or Karl Malone, which, you know, but he's more athletic than Malone, but he, you know, isn't quite the bruiser that that Chris Webber was. And it's kind of like this combination, but he plays so well on the perimeter that he's just like this modern version of those guys. And yeah, I mean, Orlando is missing something. Now, could Wendell Carter Jr. get in the way? Yes, but
No. Not at all, actually. And the reason is because Wendell Carter Jr. is that traditional big man. That's where I feel like you could see a little bit of different atmosphere for Chet, because, you know, Chet likes to go to the post once in a while. And being that Wendell Carter Jr. would be down there, I feel like it would be kind of like something else he'd have to learn. You know, like Jabari is, I mean, he lives out on the perimeter and he lives out on the step out positions and all these other stuff that he's allowed to, he can play with big men. You know, he can do that. I mean, he did it at Auburn, you know, like he's so good at recognizing where their weakness is at. Like he does this so many times, Mark. The big man's posting up, right? And with Auburn, and you'll see, you'll see Jabari's guy, right? He'll turn his head just slightly and Jabari takes a step to the right, right? On the three-point line, and the guy doesn't pick it up, okay? The second he doesn't pick it up, he goes back door, right? And he stands at the step-out position. He doesn't go flush all the way to the hoop looking for an alley-oop. He stands in the step-out position, the dunking position, whatever you want to call that position, right? And he stands there wide open, and he just waits for the ball patiently. Like, dude is smart. He understands where to be at with a big man, and he understands how to move with a big man. You know, that's why Orlando loves him so much, you know? Like, seriously, like, he fits perfectly for this Orlando team right now.
Yeah. Well,
hey, you sold me. Let me read some of these picks that I saw on this thing that I looked at, that mock draft here. So, all right. Obviously, Jabari at number one with Orlando. Chet, number two. Rockets get Paolo. Sacramento Kings pick up Shaedon Sharpe, which goes along with what I'm saying, is Shaedon needs to be looked at as a top-tier talent.
That'd be hilarious if they picked another point guard, because it's just like they just can't stop.
Yeah. And then you got Detroit Pistons picking up Jaden Ivey, which you and I talked about. We saw Jaden Ivey going number three if Detroit had the third pick.
Oh, did you say Shaedon to Sacramento?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you said Jaden, my bad.
All right, go ahead. Shaedon to Sacramento fits better than Jaden because they have so many point guards there at Sacramento. And then Jaden Ivey at the Pistons right there at number six. Or number five, number six, you got Keegan for the Pacers, which is a big pickup for the Pacers there with Keegan. Trailblazers picked up Benedict from Arizona. You have number eight, New Orleans, pick up Dyson Daniels, the G League elite guard. He's pretty good. You got San Antonio Spurs picking up Jeremy Sean from Baylor. And this is what I was saying earlier to you, Mark, that Mark Williams is going to jump in the top 10, no doubt about it. Washington Wizards pick Mark Williams at number 10 right here. Number 11 is AG Griffin. Griffin right here. Really good Duke freshman. I really would have liked him at number 12, but he went to number 11. And here, number 11, or number 12, Oklahoma City pick up Johnny Davis from Wisconsin guard. This is what we're talking about. These guys, it's possible that any of these guys fall down the chart. It's just possible because there's so many guys that are having great, outstanding stuff right there. And And I'm going down this list right now, and I'm seeing these guys that are jumping up into that top 20, like that were second round players, and it's because they're having a good show out right now. And I think it's goes hand in hand with what we're trying to do. And these other guys that people are saying, you know, they're going to be good, but we want to wait to see what they have. That's Duran right there. A lot of people are holding back on Duran. He's falling down that draft board pretty fast now. You've got just a really good mix of people that are coming through. I'm getting excited, Mark, because this is the moment that we're all looking at, waiting for this to happen. And whether it's Chet, whether it's Jabari, whether it's Johnny Davis, whether it's AJ or Griffin, whoever it is coming and that we're drafting, man, it doesn't really matter to me, because we're going to be really, really good next year. We're going to have a really great young team, and we're going to have a lot of players that are ready to play right away. So I'm still not convinced that we're using all of our draft picks this year either. So, like, there's opportunities for us to move up from that 12 to maybe 10, or maybe 12 to 7. I don't know, but I think it's something that we still got to consider, because there's so much movement on this board.
Well, if we're committed to AJ Griffin, right, and he's going to go to number 11, right, we can move to 10 and take him with, you know,
30th pick.
Right. If somebody else is going to go with the guy that was, you know, behind, we can make these picks, throw the 30th in, keep our second rounder, which we have really questioned whether or not we're going to use that 30th pick, because it's a guaranteed contract. And we'll see. But second round contracts are way more valuable to a team like ours, even though we haven't hit the cap, you know, level yet. But who cares? We're going to keep looking for these two-way contracts, and we're going to keep filling out our G League, because while other elements of the team are, you know, get a lot more attention, like, the strength of our G League is really important. And we saw that as the season went on, and we really started focusing in on, like, giving those young players opportunities and seeing them, you know, their work, their payoff. And we were able to see that as the season went on, and that proof that those guys are, you know, doing the right things. Like Coach Degnault says all the time, if you can do it in the G League, you can do it in the NBA. And some of those guys, like Jalen Horde, like, that was, I honestly, like, felt like I knew Jalen Horde as a player before he came back as a new player. And he was like, hey, I've been playing center down there, and I know how to go out and get rebounds. And we saw, I think, two 2020 games from him, right, at the end of the season. It was pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, and just looking at the prospects this year, it's just fun. I mean, last year we had a lot of young, good prospects to look at, but I just feel like the depth in this draft is really, it fits with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and it fits with the system of the offense and the defense. Like, there's so many players that, I mean, the reality is there's so many players that we could draft here, I would be happy either way. You know, like, if Johnny Davis is on the board and we don't pick him, like, I'm cool with that, because we're picking somebody that, in my opinion, is going to be as good or better. Like, to me, there's so many different ways we can go with these picks, and I would love to be able to see us, you know, trade back with that number 12, or maybe trade up with that number 12, be fluent with that 12th pick, because I still think we could pick up a semi-star at number 15 in this draft, because there's so many big men, there's so many power forwards, there's so many small forwards, there's so many guys that are going to fall through the cracks. Out of this year alone, I feel like we're going to see, you know, one or two players that are power forwards or small forwards, or just a forward in general, that's going to be a second round pick that's going to end up being an all-star. And I think that's a really good indication that if Sam Presti trades and picks up an extra second round pick, I'm cool with that, because in the long run, like, this team is we need those second round draft picks, those $2 million a year guys, and them to be successful in order for this team to be able to have a legitimate chance of winning a championship. And I think that's clear indication with every team that's in the Western Conference and Eastern Conference finals right now. You have to have those second round picks. You have to have those $2 million a year guys and them to be able to produce what you need. Otherwise, you're just fucked.
Yeah. And organization-wide, like, you see this investment coming in, and even players who go undrafted end up really getting that buy-in. So we're we're enjoying watching the way that this team is being built. And, you know, a lot of information out there, you know, about these players kind of makes you really believe that, I don't know, I feel like three or four of the guys, whenever we watch, we were like, okay, these guys are probably the guy that we're going to go with. So then all of a sudden we get the number two pick and everything changes. But, like, if you look at it, like, there are certain types of prospects where you feel like if we were in that same range as we were last year, we'd be looking for those, you know, potential stars that are kind of undervalued. But now you're sitting at the number two, and really we have two choices. We can either take a known commodity, right, a well-known player, or we can trade back. And we definitely feel like that number two pick is something we'll keep unless, you know, for some reason the guy that we want isn't there and we didn't want the other guy. But the combination of what types of future picks and stuff like that there, we could dude, get.
It's one or the other,
right?
In my opinion. Chet, Jabari, or Paolo. It's one of those three guys.
You think so? No trade back.
Well, I mean, again, if we trade back, right, it's we're picking Chet and we're picking the team that gets Paolo.
Okay.
Or the team that gets Jaden, and we're trading with them. As simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, you guys want Chet? Cool. We want this player.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, that's the only way, because Sam is smart enough to recognize that you don't get the second pick all the time.
Right.
And Jabari and Chet are so much better than any of the guys that we've had options to pick in the past at this point in their careers, that there's no way that he's not picking one of these two guys. Like, and if he doesn't, it's because Paolo has made it clear, you know, that he's better than these guys.
Right.
And at this point, I haven't seen that, but that doesn't mean that that's not happening behind the scenes.
Right.
The things that we don't see.
Right. That's the wild card, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot on the table. When I look at it, I feel like it's probably one of the most defined, you know, top two that we've ever seen. But, you know, we're going to hear rumors that Presti looked at every option on the table, right? Because that's their job. They want to know who's going to get picked in front of them. They want to know who's going to get picked between where they are now in number 12. So trading up, trading back, those rumors will come out. But in the end, like, we really feel like this is a Chet draft for us. And if people would have believed that he would have gone number two before this college season started, I think that would have been hard to believe. But
he doesn't go number two unless Orlando's picking.
Right.
I mean, he just doesn't. I don't see any other circumstances that Chet goes number two.
Which, it's kind of like a God thing, bro.
Like, if it happens this way, man, like, there's no doubt that the Oklahoma City Thunder have some secret deal with either the devil or God. I mean, like, it's one way or the other, because, like, if we get Chet and he ends up being that superstar that we all think he could be, like, everybody's going to look back at this as being that Odom moment where everybody's like, oh, look at Odom. He's so, so good. And then KD comes out, you know? And there's so many times that the second or third or fourth player in the draft are the best players in the draft.
Yeah, but that's some sort of, like, conventional wisdom makes people think, well, if you can get a 7-footer or if you can get this, you have to do it. And they miss out on, like you said, the best player of the draft. Sometimes it's like the number one pick is LeBron and everybody knew it. But
yeah, I mean, he was the number one pick for like 3 years in everybody's opinion.
Right.
You know, there was like he was the chosen one, you know?
Right. But this is one of those drafts where, I mean, I didn't know about Jabari until this season. Did you know about him coming into the season?
I heard about him. I saw him in you know, the high school rankings, like I check out every single year.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about his game. I didn't know how it transitioned into the NBA. You know, all those things are big, you know, question marks. Did I see him coming out and doing what he's doing? No. I did not. I mean, as a freshman, him coming out and putting up 17 and what, 11 or 10 and 9 or whatever it was. How do you see that? I mean, there's certain guys I saw in high school, you know, dominate, like Blake Griffin. Like, you're like, holy shit, this dude's going to go out there and have all-star numbers and player of the year numbers right away, you know? But like Jabari, like as good as he is, you just see him dominating high school. So you wonder if he can translate that into the college. And obviously at Auburn and playing the competition he did, I mean, he like dominated. And I mean, think about it. Orlando, you know, they've had a front seat to his domination in the SEC at Auburn. You know, like they've had a front row of that. So like to me, like again, like if you're looking at Jabari and you're saying this guy is the future of the NBA, yeah, Orlando has him number one. Like, you know, like there's no, like,
are we just wishful thinking, bro?
Like I thought about that last episode after I went back and I listened to parts of it, right? I'm like, are we just wishful thinking here? Is it Chet really going to just go number one and this is going to be the way it is? Like, again, it's the fit, man. It's the fit. And, you know, the yin and yang, you know, there's certain circumstances that players jump other players. I mean, how many times have we seen a better player like Luka drop to number six, you know, and Trae Young was drafted number three or something like that, whatever it was.
Yeah, I think it was like, five and three or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is that you get these moments, right, where everybody's like, oh, well, we'll trade. But look at the Dallas. They got future draft picks, right?
Yeah. Didn't they get something like that for giving up Luka?
Giving up Trae. No, you know,
Trae, like, I mean.
that's the point. Is like there's certain times that like these players that aren't getting a good rep, that don't have the right rep, that don't have whatever you want to say. Like, that's cool. But the reality is Jabari and this Orlando team, it fits. It fits what they're trying to do with the big man they have. It fits with the big small forward they have. It fits what they have coming off the bench. It's their weakest position they have on the team right now, is that power forward position. All right. You've been watching him at Auburn play all season and drooling, saying, this is the guy we want. And all of a sudden you get the first pick. I mean, like, could they trade and go back to Chet? Yeah. But I mean,
since we hold the number two pick,
fantasizing having like relations with Jabari for the last year, for them to all of a sudden be like, oh, wait, we'd rather the alien instead of Jabari, then I don't see it, man. Like, I see what they're doing is they want the player they can plug in and play right now, not the player that's going to need to have, you know, time split between positions in order for him to be able to stay on the floor so he's not getting too worn out and become an injury risk. So that's where I see it. I mean, I could be, just like you said, wishful thinking, and this could be totally off. But
would you think the same thing if we didn't have the number two pick?
Here's the thing. I thought, staring at Chet and looking at Chet's numbers, looking at everything about Chet, right? If we had the first pick, seeing how Sam Presti has picked over the last 3 years, it had to be Chet. Like, I hear out of Oklahoma that there's a lot of Jabari talk. Jabari, we love Jabari. We wish we could be on the team and it's like that, right? But I think once you got down to it, if the Thunder had the first pick and they really, you know, sliced the butter, whatever you want to say, got down to the basics of what they're trying to do, there's no doubt in my mind that you're looking at Chet as being that player of the future. Like, and to me, like, how do you define a player of the future that could be literally the greatest player of the generation versus an automatic all-star? Like, it depends on what you need, and it right. depends on it's what about, you're looking at.
It's about your values, right?
Yeah, and looking at Jabari, he fits inside of that Orlando program. He fits like a glove. Like, it's a perfect fit for him.
Yeah, time and time again, the Magic pick players that we wouldn't pick. Right? Not that we don't like those players, but
Suggs.
Suggs and Cole Anthony. Like, these guys are good players, but in the end, like, there's limitations toward, like, their ceiling in the NBA.
Listen, Sam Presti's the masterful at smokescreens, right?
Right.
So we're hearing, when everything came out, Oklahoma, everybody was saying Jabari, 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 right? And it was loud, Jabari. I think it was a smokescreen. I think it was Sam Presti flexing his muscles, saying, Orlando, we're picking Jabari.
And they're like, right? You can't pick Jabari.
No, no, we got the first pick, motherfuckers. Yeah. You can't have him.
Yeah.
Right?
Dude.
Why not, man? Why not fuck with somebody like that? Why not let them feel like if they don't pick Jabari, we're picking him, and you guys are going to realize that you made the wrong choice.
So you're saying he's just fucking with all of our minds.
It could be. I mean, he literally could be, or this could be something serious that he's bought in on Jabari as well.
You know, that would be some Pat Riley level shit, bro.
Bro, it's the NBA, man. It happens with every team. There's always smoke screens. Like, a team calls up and says, hey, I want to trade with, who are you interested in? You know?
Yeah.
Like, 99% of the time, you probably hear who they're interested in. But until the deal's done, you're probably not going to get the real name.
Yeah.
Just because. They're not going to show their hand. They're not going to be like, hey, come on, Houston, let's trade with, we want to trade. Or, you know, we want to trade with whoever because we want this pick. You know, like, who are you going to pick there? Well, we're going to pick the big man in the, you know, we're obviously going with a 7-footer, right?
Yeah.
With Cleveland's pick, right? That's who we're going to go for. Like, oh, okay. But they could have just want Josh Giddey, and they're moving up to ensure they got Josh Giddey.
Right. Like,
but they're not going to tell the person who they're really going to go after, because the reality is that because you give somebody else your hand way before, you're fucked on every single level. And that's why I look at Sam Presti and I say, yes, if I was Sam Presti, I would be throwing smoke screens up, because if I really was in love with Chet right now, I would let Chet's people know, like, as long as you're available, I'm picking you, you know? And yeah. Everything else is like, hey, Orlando, you guys want to trade number one picks? We're going to go with Jabari. You want to trade?
Like, that's hilarious to think about.
Because then Orlando's like, we got to do our good diligence on, especially coming from Sam Presti, man. Think about it. Like, you do that type of fuckery, like, it messes with people, like programs for a long time.
I think 1 and 2 pick really could, like, see any value in trading.
No,
it's like the 1 and 3. You know what I mean?
Unless Orlando called the Thunder and was like, listen, we're picking Jabari, but Houston has offered us 6 first picks.
Yeah.
You right? Blah, 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 blah. And we know you're going to go with Jabari if whatever. But would you guys consider trading Jabari and Chet for number one? We pick Chet, you pick Jabari, and we trade you.
I mean, I think the more likely thing is if, like, Orlando were to say, we want Apollo. All right, we're going to let somebody move up to take Chet number one. We're going to take
Houston
Apollo
number
three.
One. Yeah.
And that would be, like, that would be some next-level fuckery with us if that happened. But could you see Orlando saying Apollo was a better prospect than Jabari? Hell no.
Again, I think there's two top players in the league right now.
Right.
In everybody's opinion. I think it will be a shock if somebody else, Paolo, jumps up there or Jaden jumps up there. I mean, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but it would be a shock.
Right. I don't see him jumping up as much as Orlando deciding to go back. But I couldn't, you know, they want Jabari. As long as they want Jabari, we're fine. We get Chet. If anything else happens... You know,
dude, we get Jabari, right? He still could be the best player of the draft because Chet has to go play power forward over there.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, it really could fuck his career up.
He gets his ass handed to him for a few years, and he doesn't turn into that player that everybody thinks he is, because again, there's a difference between playing tired and completely worn out, you know, and playing refreshed and, you know, like. That's the difference. And Oklahoma City has mastered it. Look at how they rotate. Look at their rotations. Like, Chet would be forced to guard a small forward, a shooting guard, and some power forwards. You know, like, that's not going to be hard on his body. I mean, yeah, it'll be difficult for him for the first, you know, 6 months or 3 months of playing against a competition like that. But once you get used to it in Oklahoma City, playing in practice, you've already got 3 months under your belt. It just takes you 3 more months to get it all together. And we saw it happen with Josh Giddey in February this last year. He did it in 2 months. So it's possible, you know, like, well, 2 months, half a month, 2.5 months.
Yeah.
But it's possible. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just got to look at it like that, is that, like, Chet in Oklahoma City just means that he has a better chance at being an all-time great.
Chet.
In Orlando, he's got a lot harder our place to go. And that's, again, I'm looking at it, and I'm his people. You know, like, I'm saying I want to go to Oklahoma City. And I know that the longevity of my career will be there. I know they're going to take care of me. I know they're going to surround me with great players. They have tons of draft picks to help them trade whoever I want to get on my team. You know?
Yeah.
They got everything. You know, the one thing I want to say about everything, too, is that I don't know if people know this or not, but Jalen Suggs and Chet Holmgren, they played AAU basketball together on the same AAU team. So there's a connection there. You know, yeah. They said there wasn't a lot of connections in Orlando with Chet, yeah. But when you have a player like that, that's a pretty big connection.
Yeah. But at least he knows how much it sucks in Orlando.
I mean, Suggs, I mean, he played half the year, right? Or something like that, a third of the year, whatever. He was injured. But, yeah. Like, I mean, he showed some great signs. I just don't – we'll see what happens this next year.
He's
I don't
a special know if he, player, but, man, they have a way of, like, destroying special players. I mean, look, Victor Oladipo, like they traded him off like they were done with him, and he was the number two pick. So there's no limit to how much they'll fuck with everybody's career. But believe us.
Do you think we're wishful thinking that Jabari's going number one? I mean, like, if you look at 8 of the 12 legitimate mock drafts, 8 of the 12, you're looking at Jabari 8 times out of the 12.
Yeah, I think it's hard because, like, under traditional circumstances, Jabari is what you consider a number one draft pick, like every which way. But then there's this wild card that is Chet, where it's like he could just squash every single other draft in history, or at least in modern history, right? And if he can play point guard at 7'2", 7'1", whatever he is, we're just he says 7 foot, but like, he was looking down to David Robinson. So
I know.
With that assessment, we're like, look, he's over 7 foot, and he handles the ball so smoothly, even smoother than Jabari does at 6'10". That says to us, like, that's the type of player that we want for the long run.
Have we ever seen a 7-footer with the handles and the passing and the ability to get up the floor like him?
Well, no, but I would say this. Historically,
has there ever been a 7-footer besides Dirk that has been able to lead the break?
Right. Historically, the only players that, like, they wouldn't teach players to play those positions, right? It's only this modern NBA where they say, okay, we've seen it happen with European players. If you're over 7 foot, it doesn't mean you have to be underneath the basket. Mm-hmm. But in the past, those limitations meant entire generations of big men were never allowed to shoot 3-point shots. And they weren't allowed to do anything that included dribble the ball up the court. Like, even with our team, like, we hear Coach Daigle say, we want every player to dribble the ball up the court, get a rebound and go. It's like they have to untrain kind of like these mentalities that have been implemented since youth basketball that big men don't dribble, right? And that's what, like, Chet never, it's like he never understood that, right? He just puts the ball on the floor because he sees an advantage, and like, they're not going to take the ball from him. It's because he's been taught how to dribble properly. He's not standing straight up, and like, yeah, never, bro. Never seen anybody his size be able to do it. But there have been a few guys that we call unicorns, but still, like, that's why we kind of bucked the whole idea of unicorn, and we're like, these are pterodactyls, right? Because they attack from the perimeter like they're swooping down, and Poku's a pterodactyl, and we really think so is Chet Holmgren.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be looked at as unique enough players. Seriously, I mean, think about this. Poku is younger than Chet still. So, like, we can call them the twin pterodactyls if we get them, right? Like, the point is that these guys are so close in age. And then on top of that, they're both 7+ foot. They both handle the ball. They both tack downhill.
You know they'd help each other out. You know it. How could they not improve each other?
Big time. And then you got every place else on the board. Now, I want to throw this out here. I have said for a long time that I think that Poku can play center in the league. I still believe that. Okay, I know it's shocking for a lot of people, but I feel like Poku can get to that center position. Okay, if Poku can take the majority of the minutes at center, right? Chet takes the majority of the minutes at power forward, and then we have the three guards.
Yeah,
you know, like I look at that team as being maybe one of the greatest teams if they all pan out to be who they're supposed to be. Now, Poku, Roby, JRE, all these guys, like, they're all going to get 20 plus minutes a game at that center position / power forward position. It's the rotation, folks. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be constant guys coming in and out. These guys are going to play with 2-3 minutes together, and then they're going to be sub. One guy's going to be subbed out 2-3 minutes, then subbed out. You know, 2-3 minutes and sub out. Doing this allows Sam Presti and Coach D to understand exactly what the best matchups are against teams. You know, they record it, they have film sessions, they do all this other stuff, right? And then the second and third time we play them, how many times have we seen it? We come back out better. We come out way more ready to go because we know the players that we're playing against these teams. And to me, that's the great thing about having a versatile team that you're 12 or 14 deep, you're rotating, you're having these young men go in and out, and they're playing multiple positions. I mean, seriously, like, how many times do we see, you know, guys come in, play a shooting guard position on defense for a little while, and then all of a sudden switch down to small forward and then power forward? Vít Krejci is a perfect example. We saw him do that a lot this year at the end of the year. Starts off the shooting guard, works his way down all the way to the forward position.
Right.
You know, and I think he even played center a couple times. So,
right.
To me, like, it's just part of that rotation that the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to do that are allowing these guys like Chet to skip out a rotation here and there, right? To allow him to get to that 25-minute a game stretch for the first while. Like, Josh Giddey was able to figure out how to get to 30 minutes pretty quickly, all right? Not every player is going to be able to do that. So when I say Chet's going to come in or Jabari's going to come in, and I felt like Jabari could start right away and get, 30 minutes right away. He's another one of those Josh Giddey guys, right? But with Chet's body, I think you, even though he probably could go in out and play 30 minutes a game, I think you'd be foolish if you're doing that with Chet in the beginning. I think you want to make sure, you know, his base is all set. Everything is all lined up, you know? You're not going out of your way to make Chet all of a sudden work harder. You're going out of your way to make it so that Chet has a better chance to develop quicker, right? And that's 25-minute spouts in the beginning. And as time gets better, he gets more. And we saw it. When we saw it, every single time an injured player comes back from injury, they come out and play, you know, 10 minutes the first game, 11, 12 minutes the second game, you know, and they work their way up. I think you do the same exact way with Chet. I think you do the same exact way with Chet because you can. You have so many players you're allowed to do that with. And having Chet out in the game for 25 minutes is probably still going to get you a double-double, pretty damn close to a triple-double.
Yeah, and then, you know, people are like, give him more time. And we're like, hey, there's a big difference between 25 and 30 minutes a night when you're playing 82 games difference. A season. And we need to, you know, step into the next phase because he's going to be peaking somewhere between year five and year seven and hopefully continue to go on after that. There's a lot of players like we've seen, like Dirk, who start out their career, they're known as being three-point shooters. And then they transition and they shoot most of their shots inside the perimeter. And then as their career goes on, they transition back to that three-point shooting. Like, that's kind of like the league. You have to be able to evolve as your game evolves. And that's why we've seen so many great players come through the Thunder is because we find ways to make their strengths into really a part of the system. And Coach Daigneault is really great at doing that too. So we're excited about seeing how this goes and obviously, we're sold and we're all in on this idea, but we've got a month until the draft. So until then, we're just going to continue to speculate because that's what we do best. So thanks for joining us. We really do appreciate you guys continuing to take your time to listen in. And we're going to be back on Wednesday. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you then. And as always, this episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.